Hi, is anybody there yet?
Hi, Sue. It's Sandy.
Hi, Sandy. How are you?
Oh, I'm okay. How about you?
I'm good. Thanks for being flexible this morning.
Sure. Did you have a good Mother's Day?
I did. How about you?
Yeah. It was very, very nice. I gardened quite a bit. So.
Did you?
That was terrific.
We went golfing, actually. It was beautiful here this weekend.
Yeah. Is it hot where you are, though?
No, it's going to be, it was hot this weekend, Tish, didn't you think?
It was pretty hot.
I had sunburn in my son's track meet on Saturday, and we went golfing yesterday.
Yeah.
It's going to be in the high 80s, too.
Oh, we were 92 yesterday. We're going to be as hot, at least that hot today.
Wow. Tisha is here. She's with our research office, and she's helping a lot with editing and tightening and revamping and helping organize the proposal. She is fabulous.
Great
to work with her. Very responsive and very efficient.
Terrific.
So she's sitting in on the call, too. Now, John Reed, I got a confirmation that he read the email, but not confirmation that he was going to call in. So maybe you can give him another minute or two, and then I have another phone. I can call him on his phone line and ask him to call in so that this is being recorded. And so this will be, we'd like to have everybody on the line.
Okay.
Okay?
Sounds good.
Right, I'm going to actually check with Holly just to make sure that it's being recorded. Sometimes they don't do it. They are recording it. Okay, well, I'm going to pull my notes out. They'll be curious. John, did you join us?
Yep, I just did.
Oh, thank you so much. Thanks for your flexibility.
Oh, no problem.
We appreciate it very much. I'm Sue, and I'm here with Tisha at the University of Nebraska. Tisha's with Prem's office, works with Prem and Monica, and is helping us with the proposal. And Dr. Sandy Christensen is on the line from the University of Minnesota.
Hi, John.
Hi, how are you doing?
Very well, thank you.
Good.
Hope you are, too.
Yeah, I'm feeling good.
Well, we appreciate your willingness to help us, John, and to give us some really good critical feedback on the proposal. And I'm just really eager to hear your thoughts and comments. So let me start by just saying how much we do appreciate it. And thank you very, very much for your time and your insights.
It's a pleasure to read.
Well.
And I think it's a good proposal, by the way.
Well, thank you. It's always a good way to start the call.
Yeah, I have a few ideas about it.
Good.
So a couple things. One, what I'm going to do, I think, is I'm working from home, so I don't have all the bells and whistles that I do at work. But what I did is I typed I just went through the proposal and then entered in my comments.
Good.
And so I'll shoot those to you after the call.
Okay.
And after I might edit them a little bit on the basis of the call.
Okay.
So I'll go right through it, and then at the end, I have some sort of general comments.
Excellent.
We'll make the general ones until I find out if, in fact, I'm on the right page and don't misunderstand stuff.
Okay.
So is that an okay thing to do?
That sounds like a great strategy.
Okay.
Let you start, at a place where you think makes sense, and we can kind of go from there.
Okay. Well, let's see. Let me just start going through. I thought that. Let me see. Where's my first comment? Okay, now just some nitpicky little questions. And again, this stuff you don't need to write down unless you want, because I'm just sort of reading off of what I've entered, into a copy of your proposal with track changes. So
okay.
You'll be able to see it. So the first, and also my pages are going to get a little bit off because as I've entered stuff, it increased the length of the proposal.
Sure.
At any rate. Just starting on page 2, and that is a real page 2 for you guys.
Okay.
Below the paragraph that starts with young children.
Yes.
Experiencing mental health. As I was starting to think about this, I really like the tenor of the proposal because obviously the work you've been doing on developing real partnerships between parents and the professional types is exactly, I think, the way to go. Now, and probably it's most important with the riskiest of families. And you in that little paragraph, you point out that children and youth in the welfare systems are clearly at high risk and relevant to your study population. So there's it's really good to, it's good evidence for why it's needed. Mm-hmm. The question I have is, in my experience, these are exactly the kids whose families move a lot and change schools, and their parents are also reported to be hard to engage in interventions. Do you expect to have differential refusal and completion rates for parents and students of the most risky kids in your potential study samples? And I think, that's something you just might want to talk about, either as a potential strength of this approach, that to the extent that you are effective and have been effective in your work so far in getting these people involved, this is going to be another thing. In fact, engaging people who have been pretty much not engaged at all in previous works, particularly in child welfare systems and juvenile justice, but I expect also in schools as well.
Okay.
Well, that's just it. Now, on probably page 3, and this will be on page 3, I'm sure, you're basically, there's a sentence, in the first sentence in the first paragraph in 1BI,
okay.
And after a bunch of references, where you start off, empirical work supports these philosophical views.
Right.
Any references for family participation rates and child outcome? In other words, is there anybody got any evidence to indicate or even suggest that the more participation you get from the family, the better are the outcomes? I wasn't sure if there were. I don't know of any one specifically getting at that, but if there was one that you know about, I think it would be a really cool thing to put in there.
Okay. So linking the family participation with empirical outcomes for kids.
Yeah.
Okay.
Even things like increased attendance at school. Or
sure, we have. We can do that. Definitely we can do that.
Okay, now here's what that is sort of, something that I struggle with, and so I struggle with it a little bit in your proposal. And this, I just put it, I'm not sure. Oh, yeah, it is. I know why I put it here. Okay, in the next paragraph that starts off, school is a secondary primary system responsible.
Right.
After your CASEL 2003 reference.
Right.
That says few engage parents as true partners. I just have this comment. The notion of true partnership is difficult to pin down for me. The professional is dependent on evidence-based programs usually developed by, quote, experts in the quotes, and the problem children in school, as well as successful outcomes, are usually identified by teachers rather than parents. Some schools and child services agencies, in my experiences, don't buy into the partnership model. And my guess is that schools that don't embrace such involvement by parents will be reluctant to participate fully in true partnership programs and may not participate in intervention studies. You suggest that in saying later in the methods for pilots that the most cooperative schools will be chosen to participate.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think this is bad. In fact, it is exactly what you want to start with. But you might comment on the fact that school, child welfare, and juvenile justice are often contributing actively to the problem of low parent partnering by parents, and part of the intervention strategy should take this organizational issue very seriously.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So it's sort of like, I remember people doing bullying programs in schools, and one of the first things one had to do sometimes was to get an intervention going to convince the school teachers and administration and bullying was a problem.
Yeah.
And then once you could do that and get them on board, I think that's what you do when you go in and identify a leadership team and figure out who's going to be your champion in there and doing that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But there's sort of a little tenor that, I don't know, there's a lot of talk about the parents and the parents partnering, and I think it outweighs the problem that of mentioning also that schools have a hard time partnering.
That is an excellent point. We tried to be sensitive to that, John, and in places we did try and communicate that it is a joint responsibility, that a partnership is not just a family obligation, but schools clearly have the responsibility of reaching out to families. And in fact, helping professionals and school personnel recognize the importance of children's mental health as well as partnering approaches is one of the first things that we're going to have to do.
Okay. Now, I can't remember the reference, but I emailed a person. I'm going to try to get your reference.
Right.
Jeff Kellum, I know, has written at least two articles on developing partnerships with schools, and in terms of some of the political issues and resistances you get at different levels from the teachers to the people like school psychologists, to the administrators, to the budget people, and all that kind of thing. And he's got a lot of since 1980 or so, he's been working with that Baltimore school system.
Mm-hmm.
And he has just some nice comments. And again, they're really nicely summarized in some papers, and I'm trying to run down some references on those.
Well, thank you very much.
Just to throw in.
So you're talking about approaches for partnering with schools, like research school partnerships, not necessarily school-family partnerships.
Exactly.
How to connect with schools in a research capacity.
Walking into a culture,
right,
and you're basically trying to get them to do stuff that they weren't doing before.
Mm-hmm.
And you had different levels of the administrative structure, you can often have different points of view. And at any rate, it's not a big deal, but it might just be something that might be worth throwing in. Okay. Now, you have your table one.
Yes.
Okay, right beneath or beyond table one.
Yes.
You have interventions that are implemented in settings frequented by the child, promote the development, blah, blah, blah. And you cite Tolan and Dodge, 2005. You might add a citation to Kellum's Universal Prevention Programs in Baltimore, because he makes the same point, and that's that the place to affect child's development is in working in the context in which they naturally are. And in his first trial, it was totally in the schools. But in the second, he added a parenting piece. And it wasn't the kind of partnerships that you are trying to deal with, but it's definitely a support to the idea that you got to work and change those settings,
mm-hmm,
as opposed to seeing the kids and the parents in the office or whatever you're doing.
Excellent.
Okay. Couple sentences later, you have a comment that when parents and professionals determine goals mutually, competence and ongoing involvement are enhanced. My comment is it seems to me that one of the things you want to check is some things you assert without a reference and other things you have references for. And it's a fairly strong statement to say, you're basically saying when they define goals mutually, competencies and involvement are enhanced. And I think you might want to put a reference in if you got one, or else I might just ease back on the certainty of that statement. Because I think that a lot of people are going to agree with you, but I think there's a tendency for overselling what we know about the effectiveness of this approach.
Okay.
And part of what you're up to is filling a need of of really getting some hard evidence on the effectiveness and on what it takes to get these partnerships going and that kind of thing. But again, that's just a comment. I put it there, but just sort of run through there. And if you got references where you're not putting them in, throw them in, or maybe soften a little bit and say one of the goals of this proposal is to, nail down more about how effective these approaches can be. Okay. Okay, now you, it's a couple paragraphs from where I just was, in the, under the, under the heading Partnership Approaches to Promote Mental Health. And again, you're talking about promoting strengths and building partnerships, produce change in family environment and parent change relationships, et cetera. And my comment is, when we get in here, I don't know this literature well enough. Oh, and it's the same issue. Are the citations in this paragraph to rigorous studies or to expert opinion? I think you want to clearly identify the two sorts of support and brag about the rigor of studies when you can. Again, no crime not to have the rigorous randomized trials at this early phase in the development. In fact, the lack of good evidence is a good reason for your center.
Okay.
I really liked, no comments at all about your, the next section, 1B3, a theoretical foundation for family-school partnerships. That's a real cool couple of paragraphs, and it's very succinct, and it's right to the point. And I think it'll get the people, keep hooked in. And again, I liked your statement in the next section about the public health model applied to school settings. Again, a guy who is would have a lot of references and support because he is a public health guy, Shep Kellum, and all the time he's trying to put the notion of prevention within a public health model. And I think again, it just can broaden the citation support. You rely a lot on Pat Tolan and Ken Dodge,
yeah.
And it just would be nice to throw in one or two others.
Okay.
Oh, okay, so I guess now we must be getting, we're getting to the end of this section. Now I have a comment on at the end of the section, and it's right below your pyramid figure.
Mm-hmm.
And it says, you don't mention the need and rationale to develop a multidisciplinary center for having the site in Minnesota, the need to train the next generation of intervention developers and researchers in the wide range of skills required for the work, e.g. new interventions, quantitative and qualitative design and analysis skills. You know, as I read that program announcement, and I've got a P20 from NIDA, one of the things that I think you're doing, but I don't think you're talking about it enough, is that, okay, you got to do these studies, and these are the next studies. On the other hand, you could do those pretty much with R01s or whatever the mechanisms are in the different agencies.
Yeah.
And then the issue is, so what's the value added? What do you want a center for? And I think one of the things that you talk about a lot is the fact that you're going to have some really good people who know a lot about qualitative work and also some very innovative quantitative work as well. And there's just a ton of different skills that happen. You're going to involve a large number of early career people,
mm-hmm.
and that's really one of the main things. If you're going to build this field, you have to generate new data, but you have to generate both the infrastructure, like a lot of what your administrative core and stuff is doing, but you really have to focus on developing the next generation of scientists in this area. And I think that it's just something that would be real easy to add. You've got all these programs that you talk about in terms of training, training with pre-doc programs, and it looks to me like your collab from your references, although I didn't have the bibliography, it looked to me like you're your style is to include the people you're mentoring in as authors, and that's a powerful way to develop people.
Uh-huh.
They're not going to be able to get R01s unless they have a track record, and
right.
they need first author publications more than you do at this point.
Yeah.
And but it's something that I think you might want to just bring in, that this is a power. This is one of the big. It's one of the reasons why you're doing this, and you're in just a beautiful position to do it. And I think that you might want to throw that up front as
okay,
just
that's
the
really
name
good
of
point.
The center. But anyway, just think about that. And
oh, great.
And the other thing, which I'll hit later again, is throughout the proposal, you really don't put in much justification for the Minnesota site. You know, I get. I mean, other than you're going to get two schools out of them, are these people going to be actively involved in the center? I know in the first administrative chart, you have University of Minnesota way up towards the top, but they mm-hmm. pretty much are connected to you, mm-hmm. and it's not clear whether they're having input in terms of your mental health advisors or whatever.
Okay.
But anyway, that might be one thing you're going to clarify, because I know reviewers are going to be sensitive to that. They're going to say, okay, so what's this? Why are they doing this Minnesota thing, and why are they talking about them as collaborative centers? And what extent are you going to be mentoring people from Minnesota? Are they going to? Do they have some skills in Minnesota where they're going to be adding significantly to the infrastructure in Lincoln? Or da-da-dee-da-da-dee-da. But
okay.
The more clarify what you got in mind here, and where that really comes important to me as a reviewer would be, okay, so in your pilot study number two,
uh-huh.
you are actually going to have data collected at both sites, and to what extent will that create challenges for your, you know, your data methodology support group? And to what extent, is, you know, in terms of fidelity and looking at variations in fidelity across site and monitoring it, making sure your training is looks pretty much the same and the implementation is the same, I think that might be a good thing to put just a little bit about how you're thinking about that. You know, just little things like, are you going to have, I know you are, but are you going to have secure HIPAA kind of stuff going on, so you're protecting, information that's going back
okay.
and between the two sides. But I think that would be a good use of a paragraph or so.
Okay.
And again, that goes in when you're talking about all this organization of meetings. You might want to, put in, when appropriate, to what extent people from Minnesota are getting either involved in or informed of what's going on in these meetings.
Okay.
I think it's implied. I think just because there might be some budget implications to this, it might be a good thing to do.
Right. Okay. Yes, you're right. That this piece does need to be fleshed out much better.
Yeah, and I'm just sort of going. You know what? If I review centers, what I'm doing, of course, is looking for things that just red flag me.
Right.
That's one of the things that always does. Oh my God, are these guys got another site just because they're buddies that they want a chance to talk to each other, or is there some reason why Minnesota is a good place? And blah blah blah.
Okay.
But anyway, okay.
Helpful.
I think that your, all the points in here that you're doing in terms of how you're organizing your center are good. One of the things that I noticed, and it would be helpful to me, and again, I just don't have a notion of how it's organized, but two things. One is, are all the people that you name, are they all at Lincoln, or are some of them at Minnesota? And I think if you mention people from Minnesota and Lincoln, you might just put a parentheses is where they're from.
Okay.
And again, that's a lot of talk about one relatively small point. Okay, I got something that actually did raise a flag for me, and that is got to make sure we're still. You have a heading called Provide State of the Science Statistical and Methodological Support for Intervention Scientists.
Mm-hmm.
And that's probably on page 7 or 8.
Right, bottom of page 7 for us.
Okay. So I'm just about a page ahead of you because of my edits. Okay, so it'd be second paragraph under that heading, and where you say recommendations regarding appropriate methods will be provided through the design and analytic techniques used in research will allow investigators to test proposed hypotheses. If desired, selected grant sections on methods, procedures, and analysis will be written by the data management and and statistical analysis unit staff for consultants and collaborators. Okay, this bothers me a little bit. Again, and it gets to one of my notions of a goal of really increasing the capacity of the scientists and creating this generation to keep it going. And I would really like it better if it said something like that these researchers would be mentored and guided in the development of measurement, management, and statistical analysis, but that it's not just, they just don't go and to the statistician and say, hey, here's my idea, would you write the method section for me?
Okay.
And that sort of, maybe it's just the way it's written, but that sort of said, oh my golly, that's, I'm not sure I like that.
Okay.
But anyway, but just more of a of a statement that integrates that with the overall goal that by the time your center gets going, you're going to have some young collaborators who really can do this by themselves. Because I've run into this too much where I work, is you get these young hotshots who basically want to get to the moon, but they don't want to build a space capsule.
Yeah.
They sort of want people to sort of do. And then that gives you a little bit of, oh, my God, what if their consultant moves or something? What do they
right.
do? Okay. I'm just saying much more than I need to about that. But I guess that just indicates that I sort of thought that sort of stopped me. Anything that sort of stops me from reading the flow, I think I just want to talk about that with you a little bit.
Now, John, we do have in our intervention research methods core, it's a core, okay, some training. It's funny, the way this PA was written, they separated out the research methods core from the statistical consulting methodological support
uh-huh.
unit, which falls in the operations core. So in our research methodology core, we did try to build in some training and mentorship and that
right.
sort of thing. We can certainly talk about how they will work together to provide that type of support to build capacity around research.
One other thing,
rigor.
I've got a. I had to submit my P20 twice, and one of the things that helped me the second time was I really, and maybe it was just the reviewers I got, but. I put in little, I might have been able to put a little appendix in or something,
mm-hmm.
but I talked about the idea of how we pair up the mentors with the mentees and
mm-hmm.
Even down to points almost like you write in a training grant where if they didn't get along, how would we do to monitor that, maybe assign, we pair them up, and actually talked about, gave a case example of a plan we had for somebody. Again, that was a different program announcement. And, but I really think that when part of it's mentoring, you're going to get a lot of people who think that who are reviewers who really feel they're experts in this. And since a lot of them are not going to know specifically about as much about your intervention as you would like them to know and
yeah.
hope to know, they're going to make comments that on things they think they know about.
Okay,
one of the things I find is that if people don't know much about your proposal, they're going to zing in on that training thing. And,
okay.
You're taking care of the youngins well enough. And
that's really
anyway.
Good advice.
Okay.
Thank you. Yep.
Okay. No problem. Okay, and then at the
one of the support, provide database development and management services.
Uh-huh.
At the end of that little section, I just have a comment that says, what problems do you see in managing data and intervention issues across sites?
Okay.
Interventions. You know, now that I look again, you do really provide quite a bit of beef around how you're going to mentor the, you know, take care of things. Oh, I got a question now. This is right before you get to table three.
Okay.
One of the things that comes up is that, you know, in writing these things, we put in all the skilled people we can who are relevant, who we get along with on the proposal. And a question I have is, will the mentors be paid for their time mentoring and collaborating with the center? Is there any FTE for doing that? And if not, what will be their motivation to do it and to attend the kind of meetings they need to?
Right. And we're just starting to work on the budget, and that was one of the questions that I put in my list of questions to go over for the budget.
And one of the things that you can give these guys, I mean, I think if everybody likes to get a little bit of FTE or consulting fees or whatever it is, but also these mentors, it seems to me, should be also profiting from the infrastructure that they're becoming involved with. And but at any rate.
It's a good idea.
But I don't know if it's your experience as well as mine, but a lot of people who tell me they're going to work on projects after the funding gets going and that they've got their own grants.
Yeah.
To find these guys, you know.
Yeah.
You know?
Mm-hmm. Well, and this is real important, too. This is a real important part of it. So.
Okay, now I'm where we start with 3B, background and significance.
Okay.
Okay, I know what it is. Okay, you have a statement here. By exploring and or adapting techniques to answer investigative research questions, IRMC personnel will contribute to the methodological and statistical literature. If you can, if your IRMC staff have a track record here or relevant publications, I brag about it.
Okay.
I put e.g., so-and-so has published in this area or that area. I know you're going to have these in the people's vitas and stuff.
Right.
But I always like it when, because I know that you guys have really powerful people there, and mm-hmm. I would name these people if possible, and if they've got an EG about, or as indicated by this person's vita, they got a ton of experience here.
Okay.
A good track record.
Good idea.
So much to do in these proposals. These little details sometimes are.
Yeah. And space is always an issue for
me. Oh no, it
personally.
Is. By the way, I did notice there are have someone go through and check for redundancies because you have a few paragraphs that are repeated, I think, almost verbatim. In one section or another, and I think
okay.
Those are places you might be able to cut down a little space.
Okay, that'd be important. Yeah.
Okay, now I'm into the section that starts, IRMC will do the following. One, contribute to the advancement of modern assessment, da-da-da-da. Have you got that?
Page 15.
Yes.
So.
It should be 14 or 15?
Mm-hmm. Page
yeah.
15.
Okay, and again, contributed advancement, and then there's a 1A, computerized adaptive testing.
Right.
And then you start talking about some things you're going to do. Now, you have a paragraph that said the following objectives will be met during the development of the TPRM, development of pool of items, pilot testing with 10 teachers. Is that sample size sufficient to pilot and revise items with 10 teachers? And again, I just don't know enough about this, but it seemed kind of small to me just as I looked at it.
Okay.
Again, I have your stat people, whatever, take a check at that.
We will look at that. They wrote this section, you know, with some of our input.
Uh-huh.
I think one of the things that we're trying to be responsive to is the fact that this is a developing center. It's not a full-blown advanced center, so...
And that's a hard
None of the studies will really meet all the criteria for a highly rigorous design.
Yeah, you know, and I know that on review committees I've been on it for these kind of grants, the P20s and that, that's always an issue. But what the argument often is, well, wait a minute. I understand that you can't do everything in a P20 and the budgeted blah, 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 but we don't want to spend money on stuff that won't yield a fairly solid answer to whatever question we're asking.
Okay.
So it's sort of if it is marginal, then as a proposal writer, I'd just comment on that.
Okay.
Because it's sort of like, the sort of rule, if you got a thing that could be a weakness on a proposal, it's better that you bring it up rather than the reviewer bring it up. And this is one I just think that when you see things like 10 of 10,
okay,
it's going to trigger off a little antenna thing going.
Okay.
Again, just this. And again, at the...
John?
Yeah.
I think we're losing you a little bit.
Oh, am I better now?
Yeah, that's better. Thank you.
Okay. Is this, okay, if we go, then you have a next paragraph is on invariance.
Right.
And then at the end of, just before we get to number two, advanced field-based intervention research, I noticed... Basically, what you're going to talk about is the objective will primarily rely on simulated data or Monte Carlo. results from the Monte Carlo efforts will be applied to data generated from the development. I thought I didn't understand that little paragraph, and I wonder if you could ask your statisticians to be a little bit more specific on exactly what they want to do here. Because I sort of said, okay, they're simulating stuff, and they're somehow going to relate that to data applied from the development of the CAT TPERM. And I just didn't quite get what they were up to there.
Okay.
See, that's where you're going to get your criticisms from people who don't know what they're talking about, like me.
And but so they'll know that, and so they'll pounce on that.
Make sure that you know. You don't talk down to them, but don't assume that these people are going to be psychometric whiz kids. You
okay.
Now, another thing here, and again, it's right before small n meta-analysis 2B.
Right.
And I have, for the stuff you have up here, it was getting unclear to me what existing or new data sets will be used. You have a number of things that you're talking about doing. And I got a little lost here in terms of following which data sets would be available and or which of these analyses might be planned for when you start incorporating some of your new measures to your ongoing, I think, free funded projects. And one of the things that might, I don't know, what's your... limitation on appendices. Can you put... So what I'm thinking is what might be useful is a little table that just shows what data sets you got and you know, what are the ends and what measures are in. But again, I don't know if this would be possible within the...
Okay. Tish, is that something that we could...
I think you can include something like that. I think what you can include now are just the limited two or three publications, glossy pictures, and then things like measures, surveys, questionnaires, things like that. So if you can classify it somewhere under that category, I think you would be fine.
See, I really liked your table 5 in the appendix, because I really didn't get to that until I was sort of at the end. And, boy, that clarified a lot for me.
Mm-hmm. Is that really the measures?
Yeah, and I really like those tables where I can sort of get my teeth into it.
Mm-hmm.
And like up here when, something like in that paragraph I was just talking about before, small n meta-analyses, if one could say, look in the appendix here, blah, 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 or we have a number of data sets that can provide the basis for these analyses, see table X, And again, it just adds more specificity, because this is going very quickly, this section. An awful lot of info is put through here, and I think it's going to just make people say, well, wait a minute, what are these guys talking about? What are they really going to do? And
okay.
I just think that those kind of things might help out. Okay. Well, and by the way, you want to get a better consultant than me in terms of a number of these more sophisticated statistical analyses. It's been a long time since I was trained in this stuff, and I'm becoming uncomfortably reliant on my young data jockeys.
Yeah.
Now, just before 3, provide educational opportunities to enhance and investigators' measurement. In the paragraph before that, you're talking about, I know what you're doing. You're looking at the review of the small case and small end research studies,
mm-hmm.
and to try to understand what are meaningful effect sizes.
Right.
And I thought, my comment was, this looks really exciting, and mainly because I didn't know very much about it, I really would have liked to see more detail about exactly how this was going to be done. Again, I don't know if you can do this with a space requirement. And it was more of a positive comment than any kind of a negative comment.
Okay.
Okay, now, under provide educational opportunities to enhance investigators' management analytic skills, you have 3A training. And then you talk about 2-day workshops. And again, that I've done exactly that kind of thing. And the thing that always gets me is the variability often in the background and experience and skill level of the people who come to the workshop. You may have people who really are very, very, very facile, and they're going to pick up, what the person's giving in 2 seconds. And then you're going to have other people who really, are clueless. And, again, it gets back to sort of the thing of one of the roles as the director of the center is sort of to maybe have some sort of a session with each of the people who you're going to mentor and stuff, and to say, hey, what do you need to do? And is it possible that we could somehow support you in taking a course or two that might really add on to your level? The other thing I'm sort of thinking about is the 2-day workshop stuff. To get through something, you have to move pretty quickly.
Mm-hmm.
And depending on how well and how slick the presentation is and, how real programmatic it is, you can lose people. And just, again, something that may be just specific to me, because I've sort of gotten bad ratings, satisfaction ratings from people who attended those workshops, because the really well-trained people were feeling they were slowed down by the people
yeah.
who weren't, and the people who weren't very well-prepared were feeling they were completely lost, and da-da-da.
That's exactly right. That's a great point.
Okay. And I thought it might be a good improvement to be specific about initial skill levels, what to do about serious gaps in preparation, and be specific about products like the technical report series. Some of these things sound great, because you're basically going to end up getting sort of manualized workshops that people can work through themselves. And I definitely think people would be interested in hearing a little bit more about that. But again, we're talking about more and more and more, and you're already over your space limit.
Yeah.
But I must have liked this. I don't have comments. Oh, here we go. Okay, now this is one that I think maybe we can talk about a little bit. Let's get on the same. Okay, you have section 4.C. preliminary studies.
Right.
On mice is 21. It's probably around 18 or 19.
It's actually 20 for us.
Okay. Now, now you have a statement about halfway through the second paragraph that says, however, no changes are currently demonstrated in behavioral problems, e.g. anger and aggression. Now, one of the things I sort of got confused here, because it appeared to me that when you talk about your study that's currently going,
mm-hmm.
is that you are getting, it seemed to me you did say you were getting outcome effects on anger and aggression. Do I have that wrong, or...
Well, we have a few different studies going on that are investigating parent engagement in slightly different ways.
Yeah.
The one that we're referring to in that first large-scale study funded by NICHC, preliminary data are certainly stronger for other kinds of outcomes and not necessarily the externalizing disruptive behavior kinds of outcomes.
Okay, but now... I'm not sure that you want to talk about that because
okay.
he's not done.
Okay.
I mean, the reason why you did a power analysis, right, for the original for that study, because you thought you were going to need a number of subjects to demonstrate some effects.
Yeah, but this is preliminary.
Yeah, but I think and maybe this is something that just you can clarify a little bit. Because it sounds like you got two sorts of things going on that you're doing research on. And one are techniques for developing true partnerships.
Mm-hmm.
And the other is you got a fairly well developed conjoint CBC.
Right.
And it seems to me like the CBC works pretty well, right?
Right.
And where you may be not getting as strong results as you'd like in this preliminary stuff, is that where you have maybe not CBC getting parents as partners?
CBC is a smaller, much smaller part of that study, the NIH study, that really is geared much more to parent engagement. Broadly construed.
Uh-huh.
And CBC is really a very specific, structured consultation format that's working pretty well if you think about it as sort of that targeted level, that
uh-huh.
middle of the pyramid. The larger scale study is really focusing primarily on the universal level of some parent engagement strategies and Head Start and early Head Start settings.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And in that sense, we are seeing changes in attachment. We're seeing changes in, more of the social withdrawal, internalizing kinds of outcomes in children. But we don't have all our data in. I mean, we're only a few years into the study, and so we really, it's very preliminary outcome data, but...
And yet, it sure stopped me in my tracks.
Okay, we can temper that then. But what we're finding in that study, John, I think it's important, and we try to communicate this, is that a subset of the children in that study are receiving conjoint behavioral consultation. And so in some ways, even though we didn't set it up that way, this NIH study is mirroring what we're going to be trying to do in this center, and that is develop a broader-based framework that's more systematically implemented, where we have a universal level program going on, and then as we monitor outcomes, as we look at children's response to those and family response to those universal level interventions, we will be systematically looking at ways to increase and intensify the attention and support that we're providing to the child and to the family. We're doing that in a sort of, indirect or tangential way in the NIH study.
Uh-huh.
What we're finding then is for those kiddos, we are seeing changes in behavior, but not for the broad sort of at the universal level.
Okay, now I'm starting to, I do have a couple comments here, because one of the hard parts about doing these universals, and I completely believe in them, is that, as I think you're saying, about 85% of these kids are doing just fine. And so when you just think about the results of this universal, it's going to be washed. I mean, you basically, for most of the kids, you don't want them to become little mice that aren't assertive at all. You don't want everybody to get, you know, less aggressive.
That's right.
One of the strategies that, again, it's one of the things that Kellum and his associates, in fact, I had to deal with in the universal that I did, is that you want to look at baseline interactions with outcomes. And what almost everybody is seeing now, including Kellum, is that all of his universal results on things like aggression and externalizing behavior, that you get almost all of your effect, if you get a main effect, for example, almost all of your effect is coming from the kids who are high.
Right.
And there are statistical procedures for basically looking at the growth curves or at the outcome effectiveness by initial status.
Uh-huh.
And if you do that, that's great. And also, then now it makes me understand what you're talking about here. I mean, it really looks to me like that comment where no changes are currently demonstrated, boy, I'm not sure whether I'd expect them to be on a, you know, with that kind of a universal sample, depending on exactly what kind of analyses you've been doing.
Okay, well, yeah.
I think that's just... just going to shoot yourself in the foot needlessly.
That's a very good point. And I've had this discussion with our methodologist, and when he and I were communicating about this pilot study that you'll read about later, we're talking about subgroup analyses, because that's exactly the comment that I made. We're not going to see significant changes because they're coming in a baseline pretty okay.
Okay, now
it's the kids that are really struggling, where we're seeing, you know, some clinical levels at intake or at baseline that we're going to really want to see and expect to see the changes in that group.
Okay, well, have your stat person, the person who does all of these kind of analyses for Kellum and for a lot of other people in the country is Hendricks Brown.
Okay, yeah, I think
he
knows
how to
actually
do this stuff.
And
he might not be a bad consultant to get.
Okay, I think he might know Hendricks.
Yeah. And he's at South Florida.
South Florida, yeah.
And he's a really nice guy.
Uh-huh.
He's easy to work with. And he actually understands how to talk to people like us, you know.
I love that.
but he definitely is. And the problem here is that there are huge debates going on now in epidemiology and basically public health kind of things, as under what conditions it's appropriate to start studying these baseline interactions with outcomes.
Uh-huh.
Right on top of that, he's actually writing a paper that's almost finished, you know, on exactly how to think that one through. But boy, he would be, and you know, that if he has the time to do it, or he could recommend somebody for sure, someone who could give you a hell of a lot better advice than me, and probably Kim. Kimberly.
Okay.
But anyway, okay, so I just go yak about at the end about that. Okay. I think I have a comment that I think that this study is most critical and justifying the formation of the proposed blah, blah, blah.
And which study, are you on the study now?
Yeah. No, I'm
okay.
Just right where I was at that point where I just responded to no changes are currently demonstrated.
Okay.
One of the things you might want to do is right up front, I think you have some very exciting data to build on. And the two things that I'm starting to think is, one, I would have liked, it would have been easier for me if I got a little bit of detail about your ongoing work more up front in the proposal.
Okay.
And, I mean, the way I'm starting to frame this is you've got a couple of things going on here. You've got some very powerful techniques for dealing with kids who are sort of over the edge in terms of, you know, at clinical levels or whatnot. And you're trying now to go to a universal. And for a lot of reasons, the way you're moving now is to both get in these powerful evidence-based kind of techniques, but in the context of intervention that has a lot of equal input by parents and teachers in terms of developing the exact strategies. And so you now have the issue of jumping into these universal things, which is difficult and will require new analyses. For example, in a universal thing we got going right now, if you just do a main effects analysis, you're not showing it, but that's because in a universal, not everybody needs it. So one of the challenges of our center is to, you know, basically develop this whole technology of subgroup analyses or examining baseline interactions with outcomes. And I'd frame it as a positive and not say, oh, my God, we hope we get some changes and it's only preliminary.
Yeah.
I think what you're going to get is you basically are going to have to, it's going to be your analysis strategy that is going to need work as opposed to your intervention, quite frankly.
Okay, that's a really good point.
Okay. Oh, I have a point that may be a smart-ass thing to say. Let's see. This is right a statement right following this. There's a long series of studies of CBC that you conducted, da-da-da. And my question is, this is really nice work and supports the application. Do you see CBC as a traditional expert or as a partnership intervention, the way you've done it so far?
Well, it has definitely evolved over the years, and it has really moved to a very partnership-oriented process.
You know, if there's some way you could talk about this dynamic evolution that's going on, I think it would be, I'm not sure how hard it would be to pick, it's sort of say, hey, like a lot of people, we've developed some, you know, highly targeted interventions that really work really well for people. And now what we're trying to do is to expand the approach, and I guess part of the reason that you're going to need this parent involvement strategy is, whereas I know, at least in my own work with first graders, parents really see the need for getting work with their kids who are out of control.
Mm-hmm.
And the ones who don't experience big problems, it's harder to get them involved. And so part of what I see you're doing is, if we're going to make these high-powered techniques available to these parents, we've got to get them really on board with the idea that it's a good thing for them to partner with the school to create much better environments for their children who may not at the moment be having problems, and to get them involved even though they don't see their kids crashing and burning.
Exactly.
You know, and, you know, in a way I sort of see if it's possible to educate the reviewers in that kind of way, because you're really getting at some very sophisticated stuff. I mean, in terms of how to conceptualize things.
Uh-huh.
And who knows, maybe I'm underestimating review panels. But again, I just think that that's such a strength, and it sort of comes out as you're sort of embarrassed about it.
Okay.
I don't know.
So we'll try to strengthen that piece.
Okay.
Okay, I'm down to pilot studies now. By the way, I'm going to make another round of this because I had another thing where last night I was thinking about it and I marked up a sheet that I'm not looking at it. Oh, I know. Okay. And your first pilot, and again, my comment is, and you're talking about therefore, participants will include 25 parents and 25 teachers and children, da-da-da-da, and they're in one of the three ongoing projects. Now,
okay.
It looks to me, and maybe I missed it, but you never give the basic structure of the CDC intervention, like what its content, session, time.
Okay. John, I'm sorry, we're losing you again.
Oh, I'm sorry. It seemed to me like you never give the basic structure of the CBC intervention, like
right.
The content, sessions, time, completion, refusal rates. And is the intervention the same in each of the funded studies?
Okay.
And I think I know the answer to that now, but I think that some reviewers may say, you know, I'm not an expert in this CBC stuff, and I don't know what they're really doing.
Yeah.
And again, with time constraint, I mean, with space constraints and stuff, you may be able to hide it by putting it in your human subjects section.
Yeah, but they won't read that till the end.
And,
right?
Pardon?
They won't read that till the end. So would that be confusing throughout?
Yeah, I don't know, but. God, I'm not sure I know how to deal with this.
Yeah. I know we agree. We agree with you because we did talk about this point, and we have a table that outlines the objectives and the stages and some implementation aspects, but we didn't know where to put it because it's lengthy and it doesn't really fit in the appendices, but it does provide the detail that you're describing.
Do you get along, or do you have a relationship with your project monitor, or who's sort of supporting this? That could be a good person to talk to.
Yeah, you know, I talked to him on one occasion and didn't find him terribly helpful.
Okay.
He's not somebody. My funding is through NICHD, not NIMH, so I don't know this program officer.
Okay.
They're
kind of funny over there.
Well, and I could always certainly call again. I'm sure we'll have more questions as we go.
Yeah. But somewhere in there, I just think. And if you could just figure out a way, I mean, even the notion that, you know, basically, what does this require of parents?
Absolutely.
Like that.
I agree.
Just a couple of sentences might be a good thing.
Okay, well, we can work on that.
Okay. Now, right there, the one thing that intrigued me was you have... across these projects, at least 50 CBC cases are completed each year. And then in the next sentence, additionally, up to 20 children meet study criteria but are in situations where parents or teachers choose not to participate. What does this mean about a 30% refusal rate, which I sort of thought it did, that about if you start out, you get 50, but and 20 didn't play the game, then that would be 20 out of 70, which would be a 28% or 30%. But I was curious as to how many of these refusals were the teachers.
Right, and I think that's part of it.
Yeah.
That's part of it.
Yeah, and to me, that's really, it's, you know, because, you know, again, it emphasizes, man, we could probably a bit of education we can be doing with these teachers as well as with the parents and maybe some skill training. What I found, by the way, in some of my work is some teachers are terrified in talking to parents.
Yes, amen.
and they don't admit it ever, you know, or some of them will. And I think sometimes we sort of underplay that part of the intervention, which nobody teaches these people in teacher school, how to manage classrooms and stuff like that, and
right.
With parents, and they're supposed to be the professionals. But I think that lack of knowledge makes them even more rigid in partnering with parents. Whatever. But, and I really thought, and I'm just saying these non-completers look really interesting to me, and I thought that it was a good thing you're including them in your work, because you're probably going to learn as much or more from them.
Right, that's the idea.
Now you have your in D2 measures protocols.
Yes.
I guess it'd be the second paragraph that starts grounded theory research. And then it's basically what you're doing in terms of talking about your qualitative stuff with your completers. I understand that really well. And I'm not so clear on one, and at the bottom of that paragraph, one-on-one interview questions will be modified as appropriate for non-completers. I'm just sort of saying, how might that be done?
Okay.
And
yeah.
But most of you are not. What you're sort of saying is your non-completers really aren't like your dropouts. They're the people who never played in the first place.
Well, that's our experience. And if we had, an ability to look at differential levels of involvement, we would. But our experience is that once people get on board, they're really kind of captivated by the process.
Oh, we're finding the same thing. We're working with biological parents in the child welfare system who are getting their kids back from foster care.
Uh-huh.
And everybody says they're hard to engage and all this kind of stuff. And what we're finding is if we really spend a little bit of time, talking to them, that we can get them to play. And if we get them to play, they don't drop out.
Right.
And
yeah.
I think that, by the way, is something to brag about.
Okay.
Because what it means is it's some testimony to how well your procedures for including these parents are.
Okay, that's a good point.
And you can even preface it by saying, although, we haven't done a randomized trial or anything here, our experience so far, it really does support what we're up to.
Mm-hmm.
And that's that some of these parents are have an experience that's quite difficult, and yet once we get them into the game, they don't typically drop out. And at least I think that's going to make sense to somebody who actually has done work with these kind of parents.
Okay, good.
Get a deer in the headlights look from some of the more basic researchers.
Yeah, well, because we get that criticism a lot. Well, how are you going to really get them involved, or how are you going to keep them? And, there's such high-risk families. Mm-hmm. And that's partly why our model has, really kind of been modified and evolved over the years, is because it is so responsive to those realities.
Right. I really like that. Okay, now, in data collection, D3 data collection, one of the things you want to do is get a hold of these people who did not complete the full CBC program. And my question is given the fact that they didn't play ball with you for the intervention, what kind of a refusal rate do you expect for the non-completers? Do you think you'd be able to get them in?
Yeah, we need to.
I just at least, and then right down I asked the question, do you plan any compensation for parents or teachers who do these interviews?
Yes, we do.
And I definitely say that.
Okay.
Okay, then I have a couple of issues on power, and they're right in the text.
Okay.
Basically, when you get into D4 data analysis, you're talking about a bunch of stuff you're going to test for. And some of them seem like a lot of things to me, and I just made the point, can you do this with 25 to 35 participants? Then power? And again,
okay,
that's probably something we just want to turn over to. Just notes to those people that some guy had a problem with this. Maybe.
Okay. Well, can I ask a question? This is
sort
of related now. And I'm not a qualitative researcher. And we have this really excellent office of qualitative and mixed methods research. And John Craswell is really internationally known in the qualitative realm. And my guess is that they're going to say, well, you know, we don't really deal with issues like power and qualitative analyses. We don't, you know, it's sort of like the whole, our notions of reliability and validity are considered very differently from a qualitative standpoint. So the more fundamental question behind all this is, will NIH buy this? Will they buy a purely qualitative study part of the center?
It's not purely qualitative. You're doing some quantitative stuff.
Yes, but there's no control in place. Really.
Okay, no. Those are going to be problems, okay? And I think, I just think it is what it is. It's like what you're trying to do is to find out what's going on more on the ground and get a more of a deep understanding. You already know that your CBC stuff, your component interventions are pretty damn good. They work.
Mm-hmm.
And you also know that you're starting to get people to parents to become involved,
mm-hmm.
Through your attempts to do partnering with them. And what you're really asking for is some time to get more firsthand information. Okay, here's something I haven't written down, but I had a similar problem and. In fact, it's almost an identical problem in talking about why I was going to try and develop interventions for parents in the child welfare system, blah, blah, blah. And I start off with this whole rap about how our way of doing things has always been to develop theoretical models when we could on the basis of longitudinal research, and then to do these like little pristine, efficient, effective efficacy trials and then move it on. And I'm sort of saying, hey, I want to work in the child welfare system, but one, my models have never been developed on these kids,
mm-hmm.
And I've never really done any clinical work with these families who often hate the child welfare system, blah, blah, blah. So what I really need to do is I'll put in some modeling stuff, but the bulk of this was to do qualitative work. And to do a lot of interviewing of these families. Why don't you like to get the intervention? What do you need? And then we found out that what they needed wasn't what we were given.
Yep.
And
right.
Well, they bought it, is all I can say. But what I did is just say, look, guys, I have a record. We have a record in terms of very hard-headed, systematic stuff. And it's typically been worked with parents and kids where the teachers are freaking out, they want you to work with them, and often even the parents are... now we're trying to get into a thing where we're trying to involve more parents earlier in this system.
Mm-hmm.
And we're really at a point where we really need to get more of a sense of who these people are. And we really need to do some qualitative stuff for our next phase when we can mount some of these hard-ass kind of randomized trials.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But we're right now at a transition point. Mm-hmm. And I try to make that case because you can sort of try and dance around it and say, well, will you fund qualitative stuff? And my answer is that if the NIH reviewers thought that this was not going to lead to very hard-headed quantitative trials, then they probably wouldn't buy it.
Okay.
I think it's worked for me basically to say, as can be seen by our previous work, we have a strong track record for doing very rigorous trials. We're at a point now where we're trying to involve parents who have never really been involved seriously in these interventions before and never contributed to them before. And we really need to gain some information about who these people are and what tends to work with getting them involved and that kind of thing.
That's excellent. I think we'll write something like that in.
Yeah, and some to say, hey, look, we know as much about quantitative stuff as you do.
Yeah.
But right now, it's like it's a little premature to go running around testing things when we don't know what to be testing.
Yeah, that's exactly what I thought, yeah.
Yeah, and then if they don't buy it, they don't buy it. And
mm-hmm.
I don't know what to say. But at any rate... But you know, I'm not a very good reviewer either for how good. Oh, by the way, you don't really make the case you should be making for how good this Crestwell person is.
Okay. Yeah, I don't know where to do some of that stuff.
Where you're talking about qualifications for the staff. I know one of the things that I really liked was you had about a two-liner in there.
Okay.
About your experience in mentoring and training grants and all that stuff. I liked that a lot.
Okay.
Just went bang, bang, bang. And I'm no slouch at getting money and R01's funded either. I did a gazillion dollars, and I like that kind of thing.
Okay.
And it doesn't have to be long. You can just say, as indicated by Crestwell Zeta, this guy's really good and will be an incredibly important part of the team.
There's a few places where I felt like we needed to do that more, and I just didn't. I have the content, but I didn't know how to embed it.
You know where I might do it is where you're first lining out. You have a figure or a table somewhere where you're lining out who's doing what, and you have a lot of names in there. And you might think about some text right around there might be a place to do it if you can squeeze it in. And again, I don't think it needs to be big, but because I'm not a qualitative person, I don't know who this person is.
I know.
And, I got a guy that I use named Larry Palenkas at University of California, San Diego. I didn't know what he did, but my God, when I found out this guy's just, he's world famous.
Yeah.
And I didn't even know that. And,
that's right.
And if I was reading a proposal, it would be important for me to know that, hey, wait a minute, I look at Sue's data, and I don't see that she went to qualitative school a whole lot, and so it's important that she had a tight collaborator.
Okay.
And another thing you might indicate somewhere there, and again, write this down because I don't think I have it anywhere, is that what history you have with these people? Is there evidence of previous collaboration and that kind of thing? Because in the center, I think that's going to be important, and particularly, what history with the people in Minnesota?
Okay.
Is there stuff? If you've published together, that's gold. Although a lot of times that's not going to happen because the reason you're getting center funding is to begin these collaborations.
Right. Okay.
So when you can, I think it's a good thing.
Okay.
But I like the fact that you tend to a lot of your stuff is not single authored, but you tend to publish with colleagues.
Right.
And to me, that's a very strong point in itself.
Okay.
Okay.
I'm watching the time, and I'm not sure if this phone call will be cut off.
Oh, okay. So wait, let me just go quickly because I got some stuff written down that I can give you.
Well, I think we're okay for another 15, 20 minutes, but just in case. In case we do, I can always pick up my phone and call you right back, John.
Okay.
And Sue, I do need to sign off at 11 o'clock.
That's right. I remember that enough, Sandy. Thank you.
Okay. Well, okay. D1AI, evidence-based SEL programs. And one of the things you cite is Catalano et al., 2002.
Yes.
If you can get somebody to do a lit search, or I could actually give you a name. I know there's a person whose name I'm blocking on who has done similar reviews of what kind of things work in school-based substance abuse prevention.
Okay.
And basically it's the same list of stuff, organizational change, manualized information, interactive kind of approaches, that kind of thing. And if you could just write this name down, Eve Reider, R-E-I-D-E-R, at NIDA?
R-A-I-D-E-R.
R-E-I-D-E-R.
Okay.
And she's at NIDA, and she's really knowledgeable. And if you could just say, I was talking to John Reed, and he said there's somebody who's been reviewing the characteristics of what works in school-based prevention and the area of substance.
Okay.
And he couldn't remember who it was, but thought that you would. She's got all these studies and stuff at the top of her end.
I know Dick Spoth at Iowa State and Cleve Redmond at Iowa State do a lot, and they're NIDA funded.
Okay, they probably know.
School-based substance abuse prevention.
Absolutely. And there have been, like, meta-analyses that have been done, like this works and that works. And actually it's quite sophisticated. And it would just be a nice thing to throw in there. So, you know, it just shows people that you've been accessing, you know, different areas and stuff. And, again, no big deal if you can't find one.
Okay.
Some of these I'm not gonna go into, but you'll get them. I've just got little comments. I want to get back for some general comments I have at the end. Okay. Now, one of the things that I just read this. I don't understand the intervention. This is for your phase two pilot two.
Okay.
I don't understand the intervention procedures. Do all kids get the universal? Do you assess appropriateness for universal targeted intensive in kindergarten and then start right off in grade one with combinations? If so, how does this work in practice? What if a child becomes moves into the clinical range after a universal, does he get the targeted or intensive? You see where I'm sort of, you know, there's a couple ways to do these. The way your class at public health people do it, they do the prevention for everybody first, and then in terms of the response to the universal, that would determine whether they got a selected or intensive intervention later. The way that Pat Tolan does it and Ken Dodge were doing it, they were basically deciding early on whether kids needed something additional to the universal, and then they get it right away.
Oh.
And that's just, in terms of how does this work out, as I recall in Fast Track, they used the kindergarten data to figure out who needed something more than the universal.
Yeah.
And
we're proposing something in between. We're proposing ongoing progress monitoring.
That's what I thought, but it didn't. I didn't know exactly how that was going to work.
Okay.
And that's all. So at any rate, just to me, it has. It has a lot to do. Well, I think it gets back to how you're going to do the analysis with subgroups, and if you do that, then. Well, I'm not sure. I just think you need to want to think about that a little bit more.
No, I understand your point. I think it's a very good one, and we can clarify that.
Okay. And then some general things to specifically get. To ask the question, what does the center allow you to do that is already funded by R01s? Then why are you including Minnesota? Are they at a... I think I already said that. And what are the challenges in doing things in two sites, and can you monitor things very well in Minnesota? I would think that giving at least a short description of each major player in terms of their accomplishments relative to proposal goals, in addition in terms of Sue's accomplishments, emphasize her skill in running the trials, in addition to experience and training, which is impressive, and in getting grants funded, also impressive. Many pre-docs trained a lot of pre-docs. If you got any data about what happened to them,
okay.
Anything worth bragging about, like if they got scholarly or research jobs, have they got grants, have they done publications, and then beef up your attention to building capacity and developing the next generation.
Okay.
Anyway, that's all I got.
It's really excellent.
Okay, I hope it's helpful. I just did this very fast.
I know, and thank you so much, John. We really appreciate it. I'm sorry I did not get it to you until Friday.
No, that doesn't matter. I always leave things to the last minute anyway.
John?
Yeah?
I have a question.
Sure.
Do you think this would be strengthened if Sue went in just from Nebraska and we dropped the Minnesota connection?
It would be less complicated, and it would. Here's what it would do. It would remove a number of questions that often hang up such proposals. Like, do these guys really know each other? Can they work together? What are going to be all the problems? And are they going to feel left out? Are they going to get, if included in decision-making, are they going to get pissed? And so I would definitely think about whether or not you just sort of sub with them to do some of the studies. Is that you or is that me that's going buzz, buzz?
Oh, that must be you.
Okay, I'm just going to ignore it if it's okay. It's somebody trying to get me on another line. I would definitely, if it's not going to do anything good, unless it sort of says multi-site things are good in the program announcement, or unless there are some people there, but you don't mention that there are, who would really strengthen your proposal in substantive areas that you don't have. But in other words, there should be a real good reason for putting them in as a major player.
Right.
And putting them that high on the organizational chart.
Right. I think we can go either way. It's a decision that we have to make together, Sandy.
Yeah, you know, Sue, I have to be at a school by noon, so I'm going to sign off. But I should be back here from 3 o'clock on if you want to give me a call.
Okay.
That's my best gift. And, John, I want to wish you the very best of luck with surgery tomorrow.
Hi. Me too.
And thank you very much for your feedback. We appreciate it tremendously.
Okay. I never know whether, you know, these things, you know, work or not. When you try to give people, what you try to do is to be as critical as you can but still convey the excitement. And, you know,
well,
I really think, I do think this is a good way to go. And I also think, is this something that you can, is this a one-time deal, or is this something you can resubmit if on the basis of reviewer feedback?
Well, they do have a closing date of June or July 2007. So it might be reannounced. We don't know if it'll be reannounced or not.
Uh-huh.
It was an ongoing PA, but it's expiring.
Okay, so when are you submitting this?
June 1st.
June. Hey, you know, you might try me. I get surgery tomorrow, and I might be, for at least a week, I'm going to be not very useful, but it could be in the last week of May. It would be worth emailing me if you have a question or something.
Oh, that'd be great. We really appreciate it.
Okay.
I'm going to sign off. Thank you, and goodbye, everyone.
Okay, thanks, goodbye.
Bye. So, so you think the concept, though, is a winning one?
I don't know if it's a winning one. It's a good one. I never know what to expect from funding agencies these days.
Yeah.
I think it's a worthwhile thing to do. It always appears to me that I think that some of my best applications were never funded, and sometimes I don't understand why they funded the ones they did.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's that same old business. But I do think... I'd sure run it up. You're going to get some good feedback either way. That's going to help in terms of you know, trying to figure out how your work places in the big scheme of things.
Yeah.
And but I think it's a professional level proposal, and I sure would. I didn't have. Oh, the only thing that I really, you know, I really. The thing that I really would address is that just at least to tell them that you know that the gold standard here would be a randomized trial and that a lot of your analyses here are basically, you know, using the kids as their own controls.
Mm-hmm.
And but this is basically, this is a developmental project. But just to sort of make it so that you're not trying to oversell the design you're using, but you're using this design because it's the one you can use at this point of your knowledge. And that really, as you say in a couple places, some of the reasons you're doing this work is to develop estimates of effect sizes for subsequent work. And I'd emphasize that so they don't say, oh my God, is this a qualitative person who really doesn't respect randomized designs, which is really where NIH is moving toward.
Absolutely, yeah.
I just think it's a good thing to say, here's where I am, because they're going to know anyway, and why not just say it? And our ultimate goal, and maybe that's something you could put into a goal of the center, is to do the developmental work necessary on methodology, exercises, blah, 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 to enable us to develop... are rigorous randomized trials.
Okay.
And just to get them the idea that that you know what they...
That's a very good point. The other thing that they do in the program announcement is they talk about pragmatic clinical trials. And they liken the kinds of studies that they're expecting to see to a pragmatic approach or pragmatic clinical, which is much more sort of applied in nature and scope.
And the thing they don't control, the people who write these things, they don't control who's going to be on the damn study.
I know, that concerns me a little bit. So you're right, you're exactly right. Let's let them know that we know, you know, where this is really heading and, how it maps onto NIH's goals.
Yeah.
We can do that. Well, this is really fabulous. This is really helpful feedback, and we appreciate it so much.
I'm going to email as an attachment proposal that I messed with.
Okay.
And you'll see the changes and whatever.
Well, that would be excellent. And we are really committed to doing whatever we can to address these issues. And I think it will make it so much stronger. We're really excited about this idea and the potential. I think it's, then I wake up at night thinking, it's such a long shot, and that's why I'm not even sure that they're going to buy the whole idea.
Well, isn't that a problem we all have?
I know.
Over again. These damn things are so much work, and if they work, it's great, and if they don't, you just feel like somebody kicked you in the stomach.
Yeah, but we can only try.
Okay, righto.
So we are committed to this idea, and it's something that we believe in, so we're going to keep moving forward. Again, thank you so much. Good luck to you and with what you're going through. Hope that all turns out okay.
Okay, now. Talk to you later then.
Okay, thanks. Take good care.
You too.
Bye.